From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in January of 2016 when academic and author Richard Thaler noticed something about his new book. "I just don't get it," Thaler told MarketWatch. "More people are listening to my book than reading it." Well, for Thaler, it was a look at how the industry has been shifting in the past several years, but not necessarily in any one easily discerned direction. Audiobook sales are up, sometimes significantly. Americans like reading books digitally, but there are some shifts happening in that part of the industry too. For example, if you're reading books digitally, chances are that maybe you've ditched a dedicated e-reader and now you use a smartphone or a tablet. Magazine sales in some sectors are actually up in the last year. Is a resurgence coming for hard print? In some sense, this is a conversation about how we read. But in another, it's a debate about what reading actually is. After all, some people listen to a dozen podcasts a week, 20 to 60 minutes in length, and they consider that to be a flavor of actual reading time. Is podcast listening equal to reading? What about listening to audiobooks? Does that count? Where is the line? The Monroe County Library System is hosting a conference on the future of reading tomorrow at The Strong. The one-day event brings the public together with publishers, library professionals, and more to discuss the major issues impacting readers in the 21st century. But first, we've got a conversation about that, and I already have a wave of comments from our listeners about how they read and whether that's changing or not, what counts as reading. I know it's sort of a strange question, but it's kind of fun to think about. And our guests in studio have a lot to say. Bob Scheffel is a librarian at the Central Library and member of the Emerging Technology Committee at the Monroe County Library System. Bob, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Erica Linke is Associate Dean of University Libraries at Carnegie Mellon University and co-chair of the American Library Association Digital Content Working Group. Erica, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Eric Hellman is here. He's president of the Free eBook Foundation. Eric, welcome to you.
Thanks.
And Greg Benoit is library director for the Gates Public Library. Greg, welcome to you.
Thank you.
I'm going to start with you, Erica. What counts as a book anymore?
What counts as a story?
Okay. That's how you want to frame it.
That's how I would frame it. A lot of people think about what they're doing in the new environment as a new way of getting to the stories that they are interested in reading about or listening about or knowing about.
Well, I want our listeners to think about what Erica just said, think about those questions. And before we work in some of your comments and talk about what's coming up tomorrow, what's coming up right now is, well, the countdown is on to the end of our fall membership campaign, and News Director Randy Gorman is popping in very briefly. Hi, Randy.
How are you, Evan? Well, yeah, really not much more than a day because, we end by 6 o'clock tomorrow. We still have quite a ways to get to that $250,000 goal, so we need your help right now. If you enjoy the kind of programming that you're listening to on WXXI with Evan and Connections every day, not to mention what we provide for you on the WXXI news that you hear in the morning with Beth in the morning and Alex in the afternoon and the great NPR programming, so many topics, and really it's one of the best ways to sift through the reams of information we get. Some of that information, of course, really needs a lot of vetting, and that's what we try to do for you here at WXXI. So please call now if you can do anything. $5, $10 a month. Increase your prior donation by a couple of bucks a month. It's 454-6300, 454-6300. Out of the area, 1-800-295-9994, 1-800-295-9994, or you can just make it online at WXXINews.org. You can be a part of the show, be a part of Connections, and learn more about your world if you just continue to support WXXI so we can continue to provide you great programming like Connections. Evan?
All right. Thank you very much, Randy Gorman. So we'll get to our listener comments on this coming up, but Bob Scheffel is a librarian at the Central Library. Why now for this conference? Tell me what's coming up tomorrow and what you hope comes out of this.
Well, this is the future of reading, where the big selling point behind this was not just for librarians to come and, you know, hear about new trends in e-books and so forth, but also to open it to the public. That was a big draw when we were putting this grant together to get this conference going. And I've always, as long as I've been in the library, I've always realized that Rochester and Monroe County has always been a very highly educated city. We've got the universities here. We've got, a lot of high-tech things. We were the home of Kodak and Xerox for the longest time. And we knew that this would appeal to a much broader segment. We know we have some, you know, rabid readers out there of all sorts of formats. And if I wasn't a librarian, I'd be interested in coming to this.
Right. So how can people get involved?
You can register at rrlc.org/futureofreading. And we do hope that you register in advance because it's we're trying to get a handle on how many people are actually showing up. It is at the Strong Museum of Play. It is a free conference. Nothing to worry about there. We can't pay for your admission for the museum, but we can certainly, you can get into the conference. And, you know, if you don't register online, that doesn't mean don't show up tomorrow. You're still more than welcome to come on in and listen to our panelists. And we will have three panelists and also, or three speakers, I should say, and then also a panel discussion later in the afternoon.
Very good. So 8:30 to 4.
8:30 will be opening registration, and then till 4 o'clock, yes.
Okay, free. Jump online at rrlc.org/futureofreading. Let them know that you're coming. So, Bob, what counts as reading anymore to you?
I'm still kind of a Luddite. So to me, it's opening up a book.
See, this is where I'm kind of with you on that.
Yeah, but that hasn't stopped me from using an e-book either. I mean, there's a lot of material out there, and more that is only appearing in that format. And if I want to read certain things, certain stories, certain articles, that's where I'm going to have to go get them. And I'm not disappointed in that. And in the fact that it's even more readily accessible than it was if I had to track down a magazine or something like that, more power to it. That's a great thing as far as I'm concerned. And there's been many instances where a book has gone out of print, and I've really wanted to read something, and I've managed to find it in an e-format, whether it be through Amazon or whether it be through Google Books. So the accessibility has been, you know, definitely something I've been looking forward to.
And Greg, have you changed your habits at all over the years?
Yes, and before I get into that, I just want to point out there's free parking, too. So unless you're at work, you have no excuse not to be there.
Yes.
Yeah, I've changed my habits. My job is pretty demanding, so picking up a book is a little tricky. And I have a sense that I'm going to be the voice of dissent here. I think that listening to an audiobook is the same as reading a print book, same as reading an ebook. I'll also go one step further and say listening to a well-produced podcast is also the same as reading perhaps a newspaper article that has been well researched and well vetted. And I think we're making a transition. For centuries, we were passing on stories through oral traditions. And then Gutenberg invents the printing press. We have books. For centuries, reading becomes a primary way of transmitting information from one place to another, from one generation to another. And now we have the means to archive the oral tradition again. And so I don't view the oral tradition as being less. It's not reading in the sense that you're looking at a page and processing letters in a book, but it is storytelling, which is what reading is. And I think the perfect example of this is, I don't know if you're familiar with an author, Aaron Makey. He does a podcast, very popular, called Lore. He does his podcast bi-monthly. He's an established author. He has some books that are not related to lore. He has a series related to lore. And now he has an Amazon Prime television show that is based on his podcast. So we're looking at media convergence here, where reading is becoming very, very fluid. It's listening to podcasts, it's listening to audiobooks, it's reading books, it's reading magazines, it's reading long-form journalism. I know Bob's probably rolling his eyes because we disagree on this, but it's okay.
You can disagree.
I wasn't rolling my eyes, Greg.
I can't see that from my eyes. And I'm not sure my eyes.
No, they're not rolling. No, as I said, accessibility is a major thing, and that more things are available than ever were in the history of storytelling is, you know, I'm certainly gratified by that.
Okay,
question. Being a librarian is all about access.
So. Let's see what the president of the Free eBook Foundation, Eric Hellman, has to say about this. Where do you weigh in on what counts as reading, books, et cetera?
So in my house, there's a huge amount of reading going on, and most of it is on cell phones, iPhones, et cetera. And the things that people are reading in my house tends to be a lot of fan fiction. So if you look at the fan fiction sites like Archive of Our Own, they are growing like gangbusters. Huge amounts of articles written by the fans who are reading them. And that's what my house is spending the most time on. The site Wattpad, they claim that they have 15 billion reader hours per month.
What's the site?
Wattpad. The demographics of Wattpad tend towards teenage girls and people in the Philippines, but 15 billion hours is a lot.
Yeah, and I guess then the question becomes, should we try to steer people back to traditional book reading, or is this accepting our technological future?
I think our technological future is not what we think of as traditional books, but because the books have become digital, they can become new things.
Well, let's go ahead and take our first phone call, because you guys have sparked some interest in our listeners. Eric's got a big smile. Bill in Hamlin. I'm not sure he's going to agree with everything he's heard. Go ahead, Bill.
Hi. I definitely disagree with the gentleman that was saying that audiobooks and ebooks and podcasts, whatever that is, because I don't even know what a podcast is, are the same as reading a book. I couldn't disagree more. I really enjoy having a book in my hands. I enjoy looking at the printed word, looking at the punctuation, and, you know, knowing when a chapter starts and when it ends. To me, it's just a completely different experience than listening to an audiobook, for example. And I've done that too, and I'm not saying that's not a good thing and not enjoyable, but it's a completely different experience as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, well, Greg Benoit is the library director for the Gates Public Library. This is your chance to offer a rebuttal here. He thinks it's just a different experience and should be categorized that way.
It is a different experience on one level. Yes, reading a book, you're reading text. That is the foundation of the transmission of information in our society, whether it's through reading a magazine, newspaper, internet, web page. So I would agree with you that reading is fundamental. That is the critical skill that you need to have to access all other forms of storytelling. Now, I'm looking at this in a broader sense, and I'm viewing reading as storytelling. Listening to an audiobook, while not, you know, you're not the one reading the text off the page, you are still engaging the same portions of your brain. You're still listening to and enjoying the same story. I'd also like to point out that you're not familiar with what a podcast is, but you have an opinion that it is not equivalent to reading. So I disagree with you there. A well-researched, well-vetted, well-produced podcast is equal to a well-produced book on CD.
Okay. Bill, you want to respond there? Go ahead.
Well, equal to, you know, I don't know if I agree with that, but I'll give him that point on the podcast, because, again, I think I know what it is, but I'm not sure, so I'm not going to get into that too much. But, you know, he brought up something that I, you know, just found myself thinking, another reason why I like to read a book. If you listen to something, whether it's on a podcast or audio book, I don't think it's as easy to pick up new words to expand your vocabulary as it is to actually read over something, see it in front of you. I've gained a lot of vocabulary as a result of that, and I don't think the same could be could be true if I was just listening to a book.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. And I would also say I enjoy reading e-books on smartphones and tablets because many of them have the feature where if you don't know the word, you can tap on it and it gives you a definition. And I would say that alone has probably expanded my my vocabulary the most of my adult life now that I'm not forced to take spelling and vocabulary tests on a weekly basis.
Well, let me turn back to Erica Linke, Associate Dean of University Libraries at Carnegie Mellon University and co-chair of the American Library Association Digital Content Working Group. I certainly understand the debate that Bill and Greg may have about what kind of counts or constitutes. What I have heard from some listeners is even if we accept that storytelling now is moving into different realms and technology gives us a chance to do it in different ways, and we've always wanted to be told stories and consume them in some ways, there's still something better, you know, quote-unquote, better for us, better for our brain development, better for kids when it comes to book reading versus the others, and that we should probably hold to that in some way. That's what some listeners are essentially weighing in with, that there's something, I don't know if it's more noble, but maybe actually better for us, and that we shouldn't just accept that technology is changing that landscape. What do you say to that?
I think I'm more in the line of Greg, where I do believe that there are multiple ways to learn about things, to hear about things, to engage with material. Do I have a preferred way? I really like reading physical books, but I will tell you this. I can be reading the same book in paper and online and on my phone all at the same time just because it's convenient for me.
All right. So, yeah, go ahead. Yep.
Yeah, so I have a son who has overcome reading disabilities. He didn't start reading until he was about 13, and now having overcome them, he reads the New York Times every morning like kids do these days. But he is still not able to enjoy narratives or stories that he reads on print. And so he consumes them via audiobooks and podcasts. So I think we have to realize that different people take in information in very different ways.
What is the status of ebooks right now? I mean, how do you describe where ebooks are in the marketplace and, you know, how you think they fit into the future of reading? For a while, there was this talk about how ebooks was going to be it, that hard copy books are going to be gone eventually. I wonder where you think we're headed now.
So what we see in the industry is that after rapid adoption of ebooks, the past few years, the sales of ebooks have been flat, and even downloads from free sites like Project Gutenberg have been flat or somewhat down over the last 3 years. But what we do see is huge growth in the usage of less traditional forms of electronic text.
What does that portend for the future? And I guess I'm curious to know what it says about us and what's likely to be the case in 5-10 years, if that's even predictable at this point.
I think we're at a point where we're consolidating the fact that books can be digital and now starting to think about what they can become now that they're not confined to the printed text.
Okay. Let me grab Jane in Rochester on the phone next. Go ahead, Jane.
Hi, Evan. I think I'm one of those that... one of the oldies but goodies, I hope, but I love books. And I love them because I can make them mine. I can dog ear, I can flag things, I can make notes in the margin. I can reread the last paragraph or the last 50 pages. It just gives me an autonomy there to go back and forth and to reread. And I like documentaries, you know, the good ones like Josh Fox, Gasland. Those things stick with me, and I love them, and I'll watch them again if I get a chance. So I like that too, but I love my books, and of course you can hang on to them forever if you want to, and I tend just to keep the ones that I really love now. But anyway, that's I prefer that. I seem to be able to get a deeper understanding if I can immediately go right back and reread something. And better grasp it. So anyway, thank you very much.
Yeah, Jane, thank you. I mean, in so many ways, I'm with you. But here is where I find myself gravitating to what Greg Benoit was saying and Erica Linke. And so let me just kind of throw this out there. A listener says to us on Twitter, David writes to us on Twitter, if listening to a podcast is reading, is watching a marathon also considered running? Well, that's clever, but I don't think it's apples to apples, and here's why. I'm wondering how Greg and the panel feels about this. You know, if you were to look at a podcast script and take any of the really smart, well-produced podcasts, take an episode of Radiolab and look at the script of that. It is intricate, and in some ways, I don't like to use this word lightly, it is brilliant. I have learned some amazing things from podcasts, and I continue to, and I consume them with a lot of deep sense of attention. It's not the same to me as watching a movie forces you to kind of lock in. Television doesn't. You can kind of watch from across the room, do other things. Podcasts force you, if you're going to consume it, to really lock in and focus on it. That's why I do it when I'm running and that kind of thing. In the same way that when you sit and read, you have to absorb it directly. So you're absorbing a script, and you're often gaining new information. It's just in a little bit of a different way, but it is brain food in so many ways. And so that's where I do think is podcasts kind of the same as reading. I think there is something to be said for that. I don't know if it's exactly the same, but I see where Greg is coming from. And that's why I don't think, Greg, the idea of if you watch a marathon, does that count as running yourself? I mean, obviously not. What do you think?
No. But if you listen to Radiolab, you're going to accumulate new knowledge. If you watch a marathon, you're not going to get in any better cardiovascular shape.
Yeah. Erica?
So one issue we haven't really sort of honed in on is just because it's an E, just because it's audio, there's always a quality issue to things. Mm-hmm. So you can't just leave that out of the equation.
And if I may, I don't think it's that hard to navigate around an e-book. Now, I'm a book collector, no 12-step there, and, I love not just the words on the page, but the binding and the whole thing. But I've also noticed that when I have gone and purchased an e-book, I can move around that e-book real easy, just like turning pages. I mean, it's not like they make it, it's on a page and you got to keep swiping it. You can bookmark things. You can, go back within seconds to something that you read. You narrow it down and, it's all about the story. It's all about ultimately whether you're reading it on a page or in an e-book or listening to a well-done podcast. I think of old radio shows. That was like reading a short story in a way. And now we have podcasts that do the same thing, And you mentioned about locking in. I mean, you're locking into a book. Your imagination is working with that and creating it. You're working, it's a synergistic thing, and I think a good podcast, radio show, et cetera, is a similar way to work your imagination.
And Bob, let me just follow up and say that as we talk about the way we consume stories and the future of books, which is the subject of that conference tomorrow that you can still attend, the Future of Reading. The Future of Reading conference is tomorrow from 8:30 to 4 at The Strong. And it's open to the public. In fact, it's not a conference just for librarians or people in the industry. They want the public. They really do. They want to bring a lot of different ideas and people together. And you can do it. It's free. Just jump to rrlc.org and check out the Future of Reading Conference. Register. It's a one-day symposium. There's going to be a panel discussion and different presentations. Really fun stuff. So if you love literature, if you're a book wonk, if you're interested in where the future is going with this, tomorrow's event is for you. My fear, Bob, was that as technology changed and as the way we consumed change, it would lead to fewer books being written in general, that we would kind of move what we do off of that book model. And I best I can tell, that is not happening, thankfully.
No.
So,
if anything, more books are being written and being made available. I mean, look at Amazon's Create Space. I mean, you've got people self-publishing through that of just about all stripes. It's almost like if you're a budding author, your opportunities have increased in multiple ways.
Yeah, Eric, agree on that we're not seeing fewer books out there as a result of the changing way our brains are consuming information like this.
the supply of books is growing exponentially.
That's a happy thing to hear. Erica, agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Excuse me. So I would agree that there's more to read, more to do. I think in some ways we talk about an information glut when we look at the web, but I think that's true when we talk about people producing new materials and taking advantage of things like the creative space on Google and in other ways to get their perspective, their view out to the world. This is a really wonderful time that we live in because we have access to far more than we ever thought imaginable in the past.
Well, let's get our only break of the hour, and when we come back, we'll take more of your comments and phone calls. And if you want to talk about the future of reading, the conference is tomorrow, and our panel is here discussing it. You just heard Erica Linke, Associate Dean of University Libraries at Carnegie Mellon University. Eric Hellman's here, President of the Free eBook Foundation. Greg Benoit, Library Director for the Gates Public Library. And Bob Scheffel, Librarian at the Central Library and member of the Emerging Technology Committee at the Monroe County Library System. Let's get that only break and come back to more of your phone calls next. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, a Lebanese poet who wrote his book Lighthouse for the Drowning while living in exile in the U.S. during Lebanon's Civil War will join us. He joins us to talk about how artists can reach war-torn communities. Then in our second hour, Catherine Switzer was the first woman to run the Boston Marathon. We're going to hear her story about overcoming challenges and breaking barriers Friday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Gary writes to the program and says, I find myself listening to podcasts, especially Radiolab, while driving, which is much safer than trying to read and drive. Yes. Yes, Gary. Maybe Gary listens to Weekend Connections, the podcast, which is the podcast that producer Megan Mack and I put out every Friday afternoon. It's a recap of some of the highlight moments, the standout moments of the week of Connections. And if you can't listen to every hour of every day, no one's perfect. It's a great chance for you. It's usually 20 minutes or less. And that's another podcast we hope you subscribe to. But we can't do all of that. A brief interruption from our news director, Randy Gorman. We can't do all of that without member support. And we are in the midst of our fall membership campaign. Hi, Randy.
How are you, Evan? Yes, you make a very good point. You know, we've been talking a lot, of course, about great programs we have here with Connections and listening to NPR and the WXXI news team. But, of course, a lot of this is going digital now. You're talking about that this hour. And, again, as you know, that costs money for computers and servers and the labor needed to set up websites and all of the equipment that goes with that. So we need your help right now. If you could make a pledge of support before the drive ends late tomorrow afternoon, it would really go a long way toward allowing us to continue the kind of great programming you listen to both online and on air. The number is 454-6300, 454-6300. Out of the area, 1-800-295-9994, 1-800-295-9994. Or if you're on your smartphone or your computer or you want to use the app, it's at WXXINews.org. You can make a safe, secure donation very quickly, or you can talk to one of our nice volunteers at 454-6300. Evan?
All right. Thank you, Randy. I appreciate that. I see the phone lighting up. We'll take more of your phone calls. In fact, I see on the line is somebody from the publishing industry. It's Carlo DeVito. He's an author, editor, and publishing industry veteran who's now with Cider Mill Press. And in full disclosure, I know Carlo. He took a chance and published my book. And I noticed, Carlo, your career has gone steadily downhill since the publication of my book.
still trying to recover.
Thank you for just a few minutes with us. And I always like your perspective on this, Carlo, because, you know, we've been talking about how people read and what sort of counts as a book or what counts as reading. I know you're also sort of keen on trends. And I bet if we would go back 5 or 10 years, a lot of people, me included, figured that e-reading would continue to go up, up, up. Book reading, magazine sales would go down, down, down. It would be kind of a straight line. It hasn't really moved in straight lines, has it?
No, it hasn't moved in straight lines at all. And it's been a very, very difficult thing for the publishing industry to predict and try to find compensations for. It's been a wild ride. It's been very interesting, to say the least.
What's the biggest change you have seen in your career?
Well, certainly the ebook has made a huge impact on publishing. Electronic books or ebooks have made a big impact on the industry. I'd be surprised it's really impacted the journal and professional publishing more than it has impacted trade publishing. People don't really seem to realize how big an impact that's been. But certainly people who read fiction or history, biography, a lot more of those people are downloading their books rather than buying hard copies. But if you're a cookbook fan or a fan of other illustrated books, the sales on those are negligible.
Okay. And when it comes to kind of extras, I remember when, this is probably going back 7 or so years now, so my book is in process, and there was at least some conversation about whether the ebook needed extras. You know, so not just a digital version of a book, but also links within the text to show other things that a physical book wouldn't have, something to dress it up to make it more attractive. And one of the conversations I recall having, it wasn't with you, but with others in the industry, was, well, this is what authors are going to have to do, that this is going to be the future of ebooks, that every ebook will come with extras, that will make it more enticing for readers. Now, I don't do a lot of ebooks, so I don't know how much that has borne out, but what have you seen with that, Carlo?
We certainly, the industry certainly experimented with that. I personally worked on a huge major cookbook with Good Housekeeping, where we had something like 50 videos embedded in the cookbook text. We also did something similar with an electronic edition of Kevin Zraley's Windows on the World Wine Course, where we had videos embedded in the ebook. It seemed to make a difference, for about a good 2 or 3 or 4 months, and that all kind of died. One of the issues were that the readers couldn't handle the bandwidth that was necessary to take on a lot of that video space, and it turned out that a lot of readers weren't really interested in that.
The good news is the readers were interested in reading.
Exactly.
That's an exciting thing to find out. So exactly. Before I let you go, then, how do you see the future of reading, the future of books, of consumption? I mean, again, as we said, it hasn't been straight lines. We have seen some magazine sectors kind of show a little bit of a resurgence in the last year or two. I don't know if that's permanent. You know, how do you view print's future, and what do you expect over the next 5, 10, 15 years?
Yeah, print is not going anywhere at this point. I think the predictions on the print world, I think they've died along with their predictions. But print's not dying anytime soon. People still like to handle magazines. We've even seen a rebirth in the newspaper business. So that's been an interesting point. I think the other thing is you'll see a big slowdown in people buying readers, e-readers, because they're reading novels, especially on their phones. The phones have gotten big enough where you can read the width of a column in the New Yorker, and that's good enough, and people are reading it that way. So there are a lot more choices where people are reading, their iPads, etc. So it's not an exclusive e-reader world anymore.
Yeah, Carlo, Bob Scheffel, librarian at Central Library here, had a smile when I said, you know, my fear was that book writing was going to be going away. He said, no. You're not only in the publishing world with Cider Mill, but you're usually working on like 2 or 3 at a time. How many books are you writing right now?
I'm writing about 3 books right now,
okay.
The least of which will be coming out this fall. I'm very excited.
Okay, well, see, I'm glad to know that people are still writing books, too, and you're pulling
Absolutely.
Your weight.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Carlo. Thanks for taking the time to join us.
Thank you. Take care.
Carlo DeVito is an author, editor, and publishing industry veteran now with Cider Mill Press. So that gives me hope as well, that even if we can't predict exactly where it's going, you know, that there is tremendous interest. And, you know, Greg, you were nodding a lot when you heard Carlo saying that we had this little experimentation with these extras and ebooks, but it just didn't really stick. Why do you think that didn't stick with people?
I think in part because the technology used to create those extras was so balkanized that it made it difficult to make an ebook that had the 3D extras, the videos, the audio clips, cross-platform, where it would work on your Fire or your iPad, whatever other device. And I don't know that we've overcome that. The companies, Google, Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, they're all too powerful. We have HTML5, which will work within an ebook. So there is some hope of that being picked up again. And I think at some point in the future, it will, perhaps in nonfiction books as far as rather than fiction books. But as far as print materials not going anywhere, you can walk into Target and buy a record player, and you can buy LPs in Target right now. Who would have thought that'd be true in 1999? My concern is that at some point there's going to be a very strong economic incentive to produce books exclusively in e-format, because it's going to be so much cheaper than producing a book in a print format. And when we get to that point, I worry for public libraries, because a large portion of our collection will be essentially invisible when you walk into the building. You'll lose, there'll be technologies that mitigate this, but you'll lose the browsability, which is one of the main reasons people come into the public library.
Hmm. Bob, how do you feel about that?
My mind drifted a little. I was thinking of something else, that where the future of the technology is impacting the future of publishing very prominently in the field of magazines and newspapers. We're seeing less of those than we are, where books are still coming out and still exploding. More and more things are becoming only available in terms of periodicals in the e-format. So,
but books not necessarily one of them. That's the interesting thing. Yes,
I don't think so. Yeah. No, I think books are here to stay. Just like Greg brought up vinyl. It's a generational thing. It's like the current generation is more used to seeing things on a device. The older generation, of course, is going to say, I still prefer a book and so forth. But, you know, the devices is almost, I don't think there's the current generation is going to say, well, gee, I remember when there were books. I don't even think that question comes up. For them, reading is on whatever device they have at hand.
Yeah, and they may say, I remember when there were newspapers, but they'll mean the physical copy of newspapers. My hope is that newspapers, even if that physical copy is gone, that newsrooms still exist. I mean, they are vital to our country, but certainly that print edition may be gone for newspapers,
right.
Probably not for books.
Right, exactly, yeah. Exactly. But, I mean, any... cassettes are even making a comeback.
Everything old is new again, Aaron.
So there are lots of different kinds of jobs that books do. And for some kinds of jobs, print is a terrible product. The print encyclopedia is dead, and it will never come back. Phone books. There's no reason anymore to have phone books. Those map books that you have to get you around in cars. Everybody just uses their GPS right now. And so those are only good, like, if the satellites all crash. We have to think about what job a book does and how to solve that. And that's one of the reasons why those books with extras never really went anywhere, because the job that they were trying to do is solved much better with a website. The website performs better in almost all respects. So I work with free ebooks, and there are certain kinds of jobs that being free has a big advantage at. So that's what we're doing.
For example?
Well, so for example, academic authors, they don't publish to make money. They publish to spread their knowledge and to become famous and to get tenure, right? So if the cost of the book prevents their work from being distributed, then being free has a big advantage for that kind of book.
Well said. Erica, you want to jump in there too?
Yeah, I do, because actually our students come in saying, I want a book. And when they say that, they want a printed book. So we've got this kind of conflicting idea about what students want and need and what the price is. But then as an institution of higher education, I don't have any place to put books anymore. So we're constantly trying to figure out when do we buy E or when do we get E versus when do we provide paper.
You don't have the physical space for books, you mean?
And I think I am not alone in that. For many institutions of higher education, what had been the what I'll call the crown jewel is now sort of that an albatross, because institutions are having a difficult time in figuring out how do you underwrite books that are seldom used but sometimes used.
Let me get back to your phone calls. This is Anna in Rochester. Go ahead, Anna.
Hi. I'm a retired special ed teacher and reading specialist. And this is kind of going back now to earlier in your conversation, but I could really relate to the speaker who was talking about his son who was learning disabled and not learning to read until he was about 13. And, you know, for years I had students like that. And, you know, I would use a whole lot through the years. It was just wonderful to have more and more technology to share stories, to share information, to intellectually challenge students who were still struggling with the printed word. And I don't place any special value on books versus other ways of being intellectually challenged online or however. I feel like I love my books. I love a certain amount of printed materials. It probably has to do with my age and my experience partly. I think it's also just a personal preference. But I don't see it as superior to using ebooks or watching podcasts or any of that. To me, it comes down to quality. You know, what I would choose to share with my students on a smart board or online or on a video or any of those modes that were more auditory or visual but not dealing with the printed word as much, to me, they were just as intellectually challenging as, you know, actually reading a book.
Well, let me just jump in and say, first of all, thank you for the phone call. Second of all, this in many ways dovetails with two other emails. So why don't we take what Anna just said? I'm going to read a couple of emails and let our panel respond here. I mean, she's saying she may prefer books, but she doesn't necessarily put them on a different level, and that she can see possible impacts, especially on her students, in different ways. Well, here's Billy, who says, I love all kinds of books, print, online, audio. What makes a huge difference to me is the reader of audiobooks. They can make or break a book for me. I have immediately sent an audiobook back if the reader was dreadful. And as a former English teacher, I hoped my students would read, but if all they could do was listen, that was fine with me. That's Billy. Beverly writes to us and says, as a former reading teacher, reading needs multiple methods. Reading online is still reading. Listening, as long as it is more difficult to read, enhances the listener's learning. In fact, it is an important component of helping kids learn. Enlightenment takes many forms. That's from Beverly. So, Erica, I'll start with you. You know, those are three listeners there sharing different thoughts on why they don't necessarily just put books out there as the only standard. What do you make of that?
As you can tell, I have a very eclectic and broad view of what it takes to learn, because that's what some of our callers and people who've written in have said. And I agree with that. There are multiple ways to learn, and we need to take advantage of it. And what we're really lucky to be in is an age where there is plenty of material to draw on for that.
Go ahead.
I'm not going to divert my topic. I have something else I'm thinking about.
No, it's okay. But let me just briefly also ask Eric Hellman. You know, here was a listener relating to your own personal experience, and then some teachers saying, you know, there are times where if I can't reach a student through a book, but all of a sudden something in the audio world unlocks something in them, there's great value. For me, I go back to reading stories about my own privilege, you know, raising a son, thinking about all of the language he's hearing growing up, how many millions of words he hears by age 2, 3, 4, versus children in poverty often don't hear that, and the difference in speech. So sometimes I think I am reminded that the audio world has such a role, especially in young learners and development.
Well, we do live in, we're lucky to live in the time we live in. Just to follow up on the thing that put my 13-year-old son over the hump, that turned him from a non-reader to a reader, was spending one summer using text-to-speech on his Macintosh reading Wikipedia, one Wikipedia article after another, 6-8 hours a day. That's all he did the whole summer. And by the end of the summer, he was reading.
You were probably grateful for that chance, though, right? But wasn't it? Yeah, that's beautiful. Before I grab another phone call, something else you wanted to add, Erica, go ahead.
Yeah, something in a kind of a slightly different vein. But with the burgeoning of what one can publish e-wise or produce e-wise and make available, it allows for a greater diversity of opinion, for other voices to be heard that wouldn't necessarily burble up or come to come into trade publishing necessarily, but gives people a first step to be heard and to be listened. And I think that's immeasurable in what that's brought to an overall culture.
What a great point. All right, let's get back to the phones. This is Ergen in Fairport. Go ahead, Ergen.
Yes, Evan, good afternoon. My question, I'm not sure how related it is to the topic, but we have a 2.5-year-old son, and we read to him all the time. And when I was at the library recently, I saw a challenge to read 1,000 books before the age of 7, I believe. I think Bob can correct me if I'm wrong. But my question was, you know, I saw that, I was excited about it, but then the more I thought about it was, is it really worth forcing him to read 1,000 books before the age of 7 or 6, whatever the age is? So basically my question is the quality or the quantity important to read the young ones early on when we are reading to them and getting them to read before a certain age?
If you don't mind, I can answer the question. My wife is one of the children's librarians at the Fairport Public Library, if that was the library you were at. And yeah, if you ever see her name is Anne, she can do a much better job than the butchered explanation I'm going to give you right now. I think what that's about is about building vocabulary and about building good habits in leisurely reading. I meet so many young people who hate reading because it's shoved down their throats. It's Moby Dick. It's Great Expectations. It's my favorite book to hate. What was it? Ethan Frome. I can't think of it now. I hated it so much. I'm sorry. I'm a librarian. I'm talking about books I hate. This is really bad. I should have stopped a minute ago. But the purpose of that is to get the child into the habit of reading books, choosing books, finding books that are of interest to them, and then ultimately get them to a point. Now, it counts if you're reading the book to the kid, to your child, but ultimately you want to get them to the point where they're selecting the books, where they're finding out what their interests are. It should be quality over quantity. Now, they put a quantifier on at 1,000 books, but that's more or less, as my understanding goes, so that the child may have access to a certain number of vocabulary words. If there are any children's librarians in the waning minutes of the show who want to call in and tell me how wrong I am, please feel free. But I believe that's the gist of what 1,000 books before kindergarten is supposed to do.
Okay. Well, Ergen, good luck to you. Bob, do you want to jump in there?
I think in any case, the cream's going to rise to the top. I think the most important thing is keeping the mind active. So quality versus quantity, I don't know if that can really be argued. It's all going to, you know, if you're keeping the child active, they can determine for themselves. They're not going to be, you know, dense to the stuff. I mean, there's been an argument for comic books for years. Mm-hmm. You know, is comic books reading? Are comic books reading? And I'd say yes. Why not? Because you're still, again, there's that engaging, that locking in. You're even if the pictures are there, you're still developing an imagination that works with that particular format. you know.
Well, we're down to our last about 40 seconds, so just want to let you know one more time. The Future of Reading Conference is tomorrow, and it's open to the public. It is not just for librarians or just for people in the industry. It's open to the public. They want you to be there, and it's free tomorrow, 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. at The Strong. Bob, what do you want people to know about signing up?
You can go to rrlc.org/futureofreading. There is an Eventbrite there, and you can register very simply. Again, it's free, as Evan said. If for some reason you forgot or you're busy and you wake up in the morning and say, geez, I've got to get to this conference, you're still welcome to come down. We're not going to turn you away. There's plenty of room.
Free parking, too.
Free
and then
parking.
We also have a panel discussion where there were some individuals who were not a part of this radio program.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah. You'll see. You'll have lots of people there who couldn't be right here in studio with this, with us this hour. But really interesting stuff on the future of reading and a lot of, for me, a lot of heartening stuff. I want to thank our guest, Bob Scheffel, librarian at the Central Library. Great having you. Thank you for being here. Eric Hellman is president of the Free eBook Foundation. Eric, welcome. Thank you for being here, and great having your experiences on the program.
It was fun.
Also, Greg Benoit, Library Director for the Gates Public Library. Thank you, Greg. And also, thanks to Erica Linke, Associate Dean of University Libraries at Carnegie Mellon University. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, it's rrlc.org. Check it out. Go have fun tomorrow. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, Megan Mack, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon, and we're back with you Friday on member-supported public radio.